Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Exiting Through the 2010s, a podcast about the movies from the 2010s. I'm Jack Draper. With me, the rightful heir to the throne, is Kelly Williams.
God, I'd be such a bad king. I would be just like... I would, because I'd be presented a problem. Like, can someone else deal with this? This is like... Like, yeah. I would... What I would do is, and I think this might be good for any leader, is get, like, the best advisors possible. Like, the best ones. And just, like, have... Just, like, whatever they say, I'm like, oh, that's a good idea. That's a good idea. I think I'm going to do that. Just, like... Mm.
A good leader delegates.
Yeah, so. But that's what all I would do. Mm. It's like, if I had to make a speech, I'm a decent public speaker. I think I could do that. But, no, it would be... I would be totally, like, a puppet. There would be no... I would totally be a puppet king. Because he was just, like... I would have my advisors basically control me, and I'll be the face. And I have a great face, don't get me wrong. But still, it's just... I don't know. Sword seems heavy too.
Okay, I'm gonna like, we're mere minutes into this, and I'm already shooting for the stars here. You know, being king, not too different from being a film director. You got like your collaborators. It's about rising up so you can increase your budgets. It's so that no one overtakes you over time and popularity. Hence the, you kill a lot of people, right? Some end in disastrous productions a la King Arthur 2017. What do we, you know, am I getting anywhere with this, Libby?
I think that's such a good point.
You don't have to.
Such a poignant parallel.
You don't have to baby him.
I agree, though.
It was okay.
I think it's true.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like that took no effort at all, but it also took me, like, for Clay saying he wasn't going to be a good king for me to get there.
I wouldn't.
Yeah, he said
that. I wouldn't. I really wouldn't.
You did. That's called an alley-oop.
Oh, there you go. Basketball terminology. Yeah. Right, now you're speaking my language.
But yes, today we are here to unpack everything with Guy Ritchie's King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. A forgotten about subtitle, I'll say. It took me to watching the movie to be like, oh yeah, there's... They had to, you know, make their subtitle to be a little bit
one of the most useless subtitles
here
ever.
It's not in, like, that conversation.
It's not like bad.
Certainly.
It's just useless.
In the running.
It's just like, it's like, well, King Arthur.
Yeah.
No, we get it. He has the sword. That's his thing. That's the whole thing.
He has the sword. Yeah. Yeah. But back with us from the Grandmaster episode, it's Libby Scott. How are you?
I'm so good. Thank you guys so much for having me back. I'm thrilled to be discussing this little discussed masterpiece from soon-to-be Sir, hopefully, Guy Ritchie.
Better.
Sir, yeah, I know. After Chris Nolan and Emma Thomas, he must be next in line.
It's got
I wonder how many directors have been knighted.
Like, oh, what? Has fucking Emma Watson been knighted? Damed?
She would be a dame.
Damed. I mean, that's cool, I guess.
Helen Mirren has been damed?
But I'm just saying, that's like, deserved. I bet there's, like, you know, like some of the Harry Potter kids. I'm like, you don't deserve it. Stop it.
That's history, Clay. They made history.
History of, you know, fucking mediocrity.
Sam Mendes has been knighted.
Yeah.
That makes sense too.
Okay. Before Steve McQueen has been knighted.
Nolan is interesting.
Ridley Scott has been knighted. Okay, so these make sense.
Sam Mendes before Nolan is a choice.
I don't see it is a choice, like, popularity, but
I think they were just like
yeah,
this is true.
Is so
right.
British,
like, they just came when they heard.
And also, Sam Mendes has made so many movies that people really love. Like,
yeah,
they just I get. But compared to Nolan, it is like, why wouldn't you do him first? As he just makes, like, event movies. Compared,
I love
to
Skyfall, but if you're comparing those two, he's fucking chopped liver. like, yeah, you're comparing. I mean, again, I love Skyfall. He probably did another movie I like, but like, if you're comparing those two, wait, he.
1917.
Oh no, I didn't like that.
Don't you like Retro Perdition?
Retro Perdition. It's been a while. 1917 is a video game.
Yeah.
Did he do Revolutionary Road too? Oh.
Yeah. You have American Beauty in your top four. I know this.
No, I don't.
But I feel like it's not. It's not up to the Royals to. It would be funny if it was up to the Royals to look at someone's filmography and determine if that's how they're made. That would be really funny.
Well, some of them. Some of them do get, like, because it's, I think I googled Kenneth Branagh and it was like for contributions to film. So it's like they have to be like looking at something, right? Like you did a significant British thing. So congrats here.
Imagine if like I was on that panel to decide that. It's just like all these like really like stuffy British people and it's like Clay? What?
Just, do you wear the garments and the wig like, along
I,
with
you know, fuck it, I wear like a basketball hoodie and like sneakers and I'm like, all right, who are we voting on for today? Come on, guys, let's figure it out.
Yeah, that's your attire for the movie drafts as well. Yeah. But speaking of significant British things,
or insignificant as it is
today, more like insignificant because. This has little to no cultural relevance for, I would say a few glaring reasons, but interesting nonetheless. I would say that this is an interesting misfire, other than like something which is like a completely boring misfire. But I think, well, this is Clay and I's first time seeing this, but why don't we have Livy start us off with like your big picture takeaways from this rewatch and your first time seeing it.
Did you see everything you needed to see?
I saw enough.
Why is the water dropped? Why does the sword reveal itself now?
As your power increases, so do the forces that will oppose you. The Born King will come. It is.
You felt it. The power. I've never had any power or any desire to achieve it.
That's what all the fuss is about.
Don't worry. You'll soon understand what all the fuss is about.
Are you scared?
I think I can manage.
You should be scared.
Whatever it takes to hunt him down.
If I go down, you follow him. If he goes down, you follow me.
You want him to think big? Give him something big to think about.
You wanted the prophecy. This is your prophecy. The man who pulled sword from stone. Behold. You're born king!
Whew, okay. I have a complicated relationship with Richie.
Don't we all?
As a kid, I loved him because, like, he was, like, coming up in, like, Hollywood blockbusters around the same time I was, like, hitting puberty, coming of age, like, realizing, like, the kind of men that I found attractive. And who I wanted to watch on my TV. And that's when Sherlock Holmes came out. And I was like, holy shit. He made Iron Man hot. Because I was not attracted to Tony Stark in the first Iron Man. And then Jude Law was also there. Rachel McAdams was also there. This is kind of like a hear me out, but Mark Strong.
You don't. I don't have to hear you out on that. I'm with you. I'm with you. Don't worry. Don't you worry
Thank
about
you.
That.
Thank you so much. Thank you. But yeah, I
now
love
what's
Sherlock
your general?
Holmes.
What's your vibe on the choice to not have Rachel McAdams, but then to swap her out for Noomi Rapace?
It was bullshit.
Was.
It was totally bullshit. I don't know if it was like a scheduling conflict or what.
I think so. Okay. But nonetheless, yeah.
I have such beef with like scheduling conflicts. Like, I know that the show has to go on, but also if the lead actress can't do it, don't do the movie. Don't do it.
I feel like you should be like, you know how people use like time traveling for like stopping the Kennedy assassination? Like you should like time travel to be like working around someone's schedules. And it's like, no. We're going to push this shoot to this date so you can be on this shoot on this date. Like,
honestly,
that's perfect
because
for you.
What was she actually doing? I would love to know what she was doing instead.
I knew this when we shot the episode, but keep going.
So yeah, I loved Sherlock. I really enjoyed a couple of his other films. Man from U.N.C.L.E., again, really, really formative movie experience for me. I just like how his movies are so homoerotic, but he doesn't seem to like notice, or if he does notice, he kind of like leans into it. But they're so gay, and that's so much fun for me. But I think towards the end of the 2010s was when he kind of just started, I don't want to say give up. I don't want to say he gave up, but it just feels
Aladdin like, is a rough way to end the decade.
Yeah.
It's a rough way to end. Yeah.
It's a choice. Mm-hmm. Choices were made. I just feel like he makes the same movie over and over again. Literally every movie he's ever made is a heist movie in some form. If you want to get technical, Aladdin is a heist movie. I would even wager that King Arthur has heist elements. Misfits, bare knuckle boxing, weird love triangles, straight relationships that don't work. There's just so many elements, but it's like towards the end of the 2010s is when it started to be like, I've seen this before. And I don't like it this time.
When you started getting into him, did you go back to his old
King
stuff?
So, King Arthur. You know, No.
You're big into the Madonna Swept Away, right? Like, that's like your, like
I was
undisputed
so obsessed
favorite.
With the fact that he did, in fact, date Madonna. Like, that's how my dad...
For quite a while, too. Like, several years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Swept Away is still on my list. I plan to watch that and, like, the original, and then there's another version of it directed by a woman, and I'm gonna do like a triple feature sometime soon, and try not to
the original is very good. Yeah, that's the only one I've seen.
And all the copies are bad, which is fascinating to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like King Arthur came at a time again where I was like, I think I mentioned this last time I was on the show, I'm very much governed by like, is there a hot person in the movie? What else is going on in the movie? Will I enjoy the hot people? And that's the reason why I like why Guy resonated with me for so long, because he just like loves casting gorgeous, gorgeous girls and guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Charlie Hunnam. So I was really excited. I also heard that the movie was supposed to sire a 6-film franchise.
Yes.
Which is...
Yeah. An Arthurian universe.
Yeah.
like, certainly a sign of, I think for me, like hearing that and ultimately being reminded of that is a sign of the times. And it is this triangle that you can paint between this Tarzan the previous year... And then the previous year before that, Ben-Hur.
Yes.
Where it's like these movies that you're like, could this be a sequel or could this be like any redeeming quality of remake? What you are remaking is deeply, deeply uncool. And somehow I think Richie found lightning in a bottle to make Sherlock Holmes cool, because otherwise it would not be. But it's really of that perfect chemistry that you find between Law and Downey Jr., You know, recently we just did Adventures of Tintin, and a lot of that episode is us being like, wow, this is a deeply uncool story, but it still works. I feel like that King Arthur is still lame. Like, no matter how many Richie-isms you put in this, this is a story that does not need his touch. Well, I feel as though the movies that preceded this, in the Sherlock Holmes movies, Man from U.N.C.L.E., even Rock and Rolla, I feel like those are the ones that that needed the stylistic flair. This is just, it needs to be more, you know, more grounded. Yeah,
I really agree with that. I think there's something so fascinating about Sherlock Holmes, the duology, in that it's just like this perfect storm of mania. And I feel like every time I critique Richie, I always go back to that. I always go back to that and Man from U.N.C.L.E. because I feel like that was him having perfected, like, the Hollywood, like, what Hollywood wanted and what he wanted were, like, perfectly balanced. And there was this, like, really, really just, like, strong tone. Like, his voice was coming through, like, punching through everything. Hans Zimmer's score was amazing. The costumes were great. Set design was great. There was just this, like, tangibility and, like, grime to it that really genuinely updated, like, the story of this, like, posh loser who plays his violin and plays with flies. But King Arthur is so, I don't know what it is, because, like, on paper it would be cool. Like, there's so many elements of this movie that are, like, very stunning. It's frequently stunning, like when Charlie Hunnam pulls the sword out of the rock, and it's, you just see, like, slow-mo of, like, dogs barking and, like, horses foaming at the mouth, and Charlie Hunnam's eyes go blue, or, like, the Lady in the Lake shots. I feel like there were good ideas, but I feel like he, I don't know, was, like, checked out or something. It's a bummer.
So I forget how much I truly discussed this last time we covered Richie, and I'm not sure if I saw The Covenant, or Guy Ritchie's The Covenant yet.
Guy Ritchie's The Covenant. The fact that that's the title is
that
insane.
Whole release,
it's,
is
really funny.
I have never seen something so bungled before. It's truly just like they made all of the wrong choices every step of the way. It was very strange. Yeah. I've not seen The Gentleman, which is another movie. When did that come out? 20 or 19?
There's also a
2020.
Show.
I think that was, like, pre-pandemic.
Yeah, the show just came out.
Yeah, it was, like, January.
The show just came out. I have no idea if it's good. He produced it and directed, like, the pilot or whatever. I don't know if he did, like, actual writing on it or whatever.
Well, I will see.
People like it. I didn't.
The movie or the show?
Interesting.
Either. But I will say, I think I can say this because by the time the episode comes out, his new movie will have come out, the Henry Cavill one.
This is going to be on 2 weeks.
Okay, perfect. I have seen Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, and it's safe to say we're slightly back. We're almost back.
Okay, we'll take it.
Stoked to that movie. So, to say is, I'm on the Richie train. I'm back on. After Wrath of Man, I fucking love that movie because it's literally about I don't think he's ever really done anything like it. It's so fucking serious. I mean, it has, like, dark humor, but it's, like, mostly about a sadistic Jason Statham being, like, an agent of death and how the cruelty of man is surrounds us and is, like, a virus that infects everything. It's a dark, fucking nihilistic, really, like, upsetting movie that I really, really like because it's fucking gnarly. I thought The Covenant,
it is pretty accurate. It is pretty accurate to say that is him doing Michael Mann, but it is largely successful in how it's, like, not really an imitation, but it's like,
just such a bleak
natural
movie. It's so mean. I really, really dug The Covenant way more than I thought I was going to. I think he's in his bag filmmaking wise in that movie.
Did any of us see Operation Fortune? Because that also had a pretty...
You mean Ruse like, de Guerre? Hell no.
Yeah, right. I was not going to attempt that.
Another culinated title that didn't
need
to be. Like, why is he doing this? Who's telling him
for as much as... Like, for as much as I appreciated Game Sherlock Holmes 2 from when we did that episode, Game of Shadows, not really the most captivating of subtitles either.
That's
But I am...
Worse than Marcy May Marley.
Ridiculous statement. I'm ready. Whatever. And that's why I'm excited for this movie, because that cast and those trailers look really fun, and... It's completely in an era he hasn't really done before. I do understand the sameness is a problem. But to me, I felt Wrath of Man and Covenant was such a... Covenant especially was a pretty big departure. That I am... And this one and the one coming up looks much more like the sameness of his prior work. I'm definitely really hyped. I just love that cast, and it just looks exactly what I want from movies right now. With King Arthur, Arthur, it's not good. I'm not gonna lie. It's not good. I found it strangely... Maybe gripping is a little too extreme. My attention was held for the movie. I wasn't bored. I thought it was strangely like propulsive. And people might probably, it's 2 hours, probably shouldn't be 2 hours, but it didn't really feel like a slog to me. And that's that might be concerning, his fucking insane editing in this one. It's all cut to shit. It's going like five different timelines in a way. And the action is also cut to shit.
It's horrifying.
It is, but I don't know. This movie is distinct enough compared to the other gray sludge we get from this decade. Even if it's not successful, it's a horribly bizarre and probably unsuccessful choice to make this like, oh, Arthur, he's like a street rat who comes from nothing, and you know, he's really cockney, and you know, he's, oh, let's find out a different way, and like, you know, whatever, like it, he, you know, he's comes from fucking a brothel and has a big chip on his shoulder and rejects the hero calling every other 5 seconds. I can understand the idea of like, well, what can we do different this time? It just doesn't really work, especially with how much you don't really give it. They have to do this insane montage of him growing up to cut down, like, all right, we need to tell you, like, we need to give his life story in like 3-4 minutes. And we're going to do this horribly dizzying montage that makes you kind of want to, like, that's kind of nauseous inducing. Because of how cut up it is. And that's just going to do all of the heavy lifting for us to describe who he is. I think it's one of those things where they try to make him, like... They try to rework his origin and have him be more of, like, a grounded character of, you know, not, like, pure-hearted and stuff. The issue is it's bogged... That kind of approach is bogged down with all the heavy exposition and like mythical stuff, like the real King Arthur shit they have to also put in this movie. It doesn't really mesh well. And I'm saying all these things, but it's so stupid. It's horribly stupid. It's really silly in a sense of just what happens scene to scene. It's bizarre in a lot of moments to me, because they just keep making like the weirdest, not the weirdest, but, like, the most unfitting choice for this kind of movie, each scene. I was very interested by it. Half of the time, it looks like gray diarrhea. That scene of him with the sword, with all, like, the in the courtyard, all that fucking dust everywhere is... looks horrible. The CGI is not that good.
Especially the final, the boss fight. I'm like, did you want to make a video game?
It's, yeah, it looks like a PlayStation 3.
It's not great. Scene.
I think the actors are doing a pretty, I don't know, I had fun with Law's performance, even though that character is, you know, it's a thinly written character.
That's my thing.
He's kind of chewing it up. I like a lot of the random actors they have in here for the scenes they're in.
You really have to give it
my favorite character actor, David Beckham.
Oh my god, I forgot that David Beckham was
in this. He play?
And then when they were like, "Oi, Trapper! We've got a live one!" And he turns around and it's David fucking Beckham.
Yeah,
completely missed.
It's so random.
It's the scene where it's the scene where he pulls the sword out of the stone. He like walks up and he's like, "Where am I supposed to go?" And David Beckham turns around and he's like, "Where do you think? Go pull that sword."
Oh my god, I can't believe we've been translated into the we've been transported into the movie like with this flawless impression. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
The Guy Ritchie cameo, of course, my other favorite character actor.
Yes.
That feels pretty self-indulgent, but nonetheless, there are some pretty fun performances, like a very early, I would say relatively early, Kingsley Benadire.
I feel like with Ritchie films, the cast is always so locked in.
Yeah.
And I think regardless of the quality of the films, that there is something to be said for like the loyalty he inspires and like how much fun they must be having on set. Because apart from like, she's French, so I don't want to butcher her name, but the actress who plays the mage in this, who had a bad attitude the entire time and looked like she was not.
Yeah.
No, she was a horribly stilted performance.
I think everyone.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it was really bad.
It's not the most charismatic. You would like for her and Hanum to have a little bit more chemistry. Yeah, no.
Oh my god, yeah, that was not great. But apart from that, everyone else is so dialed in. Everyone else seems to be having like a lot of fun. Jude Law's having fun.
Mm-hmm.
Annabelle Wallace is like...
Annabelle Wallace is very good.
Doing whatever she can to like revive this like thin sheet of paper of a character.
Mm-hmm.
Jaimin Hounsou is fun.
Mm-hmm.
Kingsley's fun. And a bunch of like just other character actors, like British character actors that you know their face.
Aidan Gillian,
Aidan Gillian from.
I've said this theory before. I'll say it again. I think him and Vincent. I'll say it again. I think him and Vincent Cassell are reptile people. I know there's like they slither in every scene. I promise you.
Livy, this is usually the look that he gets when this is...
I don't know if it's just because I have something against
I'm
Europeans.
I'm open to it.
And that could be it.
I think it is.
That's
but,
fair.
And it's also probably with the characters they play, but I don't know. When I see them, I feel slimy.
Right. I do see what you mean. They are not the most trustworthy, like, reliable characters. Yeah. But I do think that it is worth bringing up Aidan Gillen, because he is Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that is a huge, like, wound to this movie of, like, Game of Thrones is the, like, it's like... it's the shadow, because people are just fed of, like, this fantasy... sort of like high concept worlds that this movie just does not have a seat for. Like Game of Thrones is already, it's like, this is maybe its peak of popularity, or maybe its downward peak of popularity. I would say, like, despite the material not really having that big of a fan base, Game of Thrones definitely hurt it.
I'll agree with that. I think too, the very first scene when they're going to battle and like the elephants are like smashing the bridges and stuff. I don't know if it's because I've seen Lord of the Rings so many times that it's like in my skin, but I don't know. I just wish that there was something to set this apart, like actually set this apart from like all the other high fantasy epics that we've seen. Because I don't like to say that a director is, like, aping another film. Because a lot of directors take inspiration from many different things, especially in this post modern hellscape in which we live. I just think he and his team, Richie and his team, might not have done the work that they could have done, like compared to like Sherlock, in setting this apart and making it feel more real and tangible.
This whole movie feels really like, it feels like they had like 20 days to write it or whatever, or in like 20 days for pre-production. Like, it feels completely like done on the fly. Nothing feels super well thought out. I do actually like that beginning scene, because I think there's a scale of epicness and...
Mm-hmm. I love Eric Bana. I always have loved Bana.
He's really good.
Oh, oh my god.
We just...
Yeah.
And
I think he's very much aged into an interesting actor as well.
Besides Game of Thrones, I hate to say this, and I'm trying to think if I can really say this with full confidence. Fantasy is dead.
Oh, okay.
The Lord of the Rings show, and maybe it's just due to quality, but Lord of the Rings show was a complete, I mean, who knows, maybe the viewership they have that is tells all of the great numbers that I don't have access to, say, maybe it was a huge success, but it has no cultural impact. I've not heard a single motherfucker talk about that show. Wheel of Time on Amazon or whatever of Rosamund Pike. Like, they're all television now that no one really watches. I guess some people must watch it in order for them to make more seasons of it, but have no real cultural impact. Movies wise, I mean, you have Dungeons and Dragons.
What about the Thrones prequels?
That's what I'm. Yeah. Oh, well, that's what I mean. Besides Game of Thrones, besides House of Dragon and Game of Thrones, it's just not there. Dungeons and Dragons, which I really, really liked, and it's kind of an opposite approach of this in the sense of, instead of trying to make it cool, they're like, well, this is kind of deeply uncool. Let's kind of have fun with that and enjoy how kind of dorky it is. And maybe that wasn't the right approach for modern audiences. I'm not sure, because we're all so fucking cynical now. But I think that's a really enjoyable movie with like great sense of scale and practical, and a lot of different practical effects and just like really enjoyable characters. That was not successful. Now that there's the pandemic and all those things, and you know, and I think there's like some suggestions of a sequel. I don't know. But besides that, this was a huge flop. Ben-Hur, like you said, flop. And that's not necessarily fantasy. That's like, you know, something else. But I can't really think of anything fantasy-driven that has been successful in the last 10 years that has had real cultural impact, again, besides Game of Thrones. Am I missing something?
It almost feels like Game of Thrones... No, I feel like... It feels like Game of Thrones is sucking all the air out of the room.
Mm.
Because even when something tries to come out that's setting itself apart, like, no matter what, it doesn't matter the genre, actually. Someone will be like, the next Game of Thrones? Like, Shogun. Shogun is out, and people are like, this is the next Game of Thrones. I will beat the crap out of you.
It's, why would it's you literally that? Just because it's the base premise of that there's people who also want to be king.
And I would like to go back to King Arthur, because there's a lot of things went wrong during that, and a lot of things that were out of our control, and I just don't think we ended up matching the aspiration. We just didn't quite make the movie we wanted.
Uh-huh.
And the idea was that in success we would have made several of those films.
Wow.
And I'm captivated by the Arthurian legends, and I just felt like we really missed an opportunity to tell a long form story.
Was there one thing that went wrong?
Yes. Yes. There was a piece of miscasting that ended up crippling the central storyline that's actually not in the film anymore.
Wow.
Oh. Yeah.
Livy, you made a good point that Game of Thrones probably sucked the air out of the room for fantasy to really have an effect culturally right now. Like, people only have... Yeah, because I was thinking, like, Warcraft. Now, again, these movies I'm naming are also... Most of them are bad. So that is also you know, it's symptomatic. I also just think, I don't know, man. I think we think everything is corny now. I think we think everything, like, I think, you know, this idea that, you know, these very almost straight to the point stories with these broad archetypes are these, like, you know, the people just think, well, it's repetitive. And they're not wrong, necessarily. And it really just might have, it might take just someone to reinvent the kind of, or like, you know, breathe new life in it. But I don't know. But I feel like the only way to really make a good fantasy film nowadays is to be earnest about it. Instead of trying to, which is the issue to me with King Arthur, is that it's not necessarily making fun of the genre itself, but it's trying to kind of add these other elements to it.
It's the edgy and try reboot. To
mixing it together.
Yeah, it's sort of the dark nightification.
But it doesn't shy away necessarily, because like they still have the, you know, the dark lands, and they have that big ass fucking snake out of nowhere. Like they still incorporate, and they have the, you know, fucking big old battle at the end with this dude in all jacked up armor. It's, yes, it is kind of the edgy reboot, but it's not like, it's not ashamed of being in the fantasy genre, but I just think it doesn't mix well with the other stuff Richie is interested in.
Yeah. Yeah. It's directly opposing to Richie's overall sense of humor, while also trying to be this gritty, subversive retelling, because that's the ultimate tragedy of the making of this movie and the final product and the reception. Is like, this is a movie on two paths. Like a very, very clear, two-roaded, like, first half, kind of a Guy Ritchie, like, overview of what people liked about the Sherlock Holmes duology. The style is there. The charisma of Charlie Hunnam is there. The back half of the movie, it's almost like the movie is tired of itself. And it, like, fast-forwards everything. And then you have this CGI diarrhea glob of the final fight. And it's, like, it's pressing fast-forward. And that's on two times speed. And then it's, like, hard out, 2 hours.
Yeah. But that's half of the movie is 2x speed. And that's why I'm, like, I'm kind of interested by it. Because it is, like, everything is completely sped up.
The other part of this, too, which is so interesting, is, like, we go to the previous King Arthur. We go back to 2004. We have Anton Fuqua rebooting the movie with Clive Owen, and that one was also met with kind of a shrug.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like there was this hankering for another King Arthur. Right. Right? You just kind of... But of course, it's, like, this trend of, like, the Ben-Hur, the Legend of Tarzan, having a moment as well.
I just thought
that
about Robin
brought the other
Edgerton one.
Mm-hmm.
The Taron Egerton Robin Hood, right?
No,
right.
The 2010s suck for fantasy. If you really think about it
was very much bottom of the barrel.
It's garbage. Holy shit!
Yeah. Is it going above fantasy and saying like people just don't care about medieval folktales?
Yes, I think that's
like
fair.
Robin. Like
that's a fair thing to say.
Gods in
Egypt. It's just you don't care. Gods of Egypt.
But these are bad movies.
Sure.
That's the thing. And like all the ones, I can't think of one that was that was well liked. It's not like there's all these well liked ones coming out and they're flopping. It's that all of these are pretty much hated.
Yeah. I was thinking about this when I was looking at some of the interviews today, and I think that this fell into a similar issue of Justice League in 2017, as like both of them were like pretty lengthy runtimes, as desired by the directors, and then they were cut down to 2 hours.
Oh, you can feel
they had to like cut.
One. Holy shit!
You can, like that was Richie's intended, you know, ideas to make it like this really grand epic with a grand runtime. They had to cut out an entire character. They had to cut Jude Law's, you know, characterization. In a lot of rewrites, a lot of reshoots, like
you feel it.
Yeah, like it's and you can feel it. And I think this is all to say, like, does not make its budget back. I think I was busy seeing Guardians of the Galaxy 2 and like many others at the time. But also I would not say Mother's Day weekend is the right time for something weekend. like this.
I can't believe that was when they did it.
Are you fucking kidding me?
That's crazy. Yeah. Is now a good...
But I will say, like...
Oh, no, go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I feel like if there is one name that I do hear about this movie that we have not mentioned yet, that's sort of a redeeming gold star of the movie, it's Daniel Pemberton, who is one of our most consistent, most satisfying composers.
The weird hollow guitar strumming, just like so, like weird, such weird sounds coming out of the score, and it's fantastic.
It's really unique. Dan Pemberton has the juice.
I agree. Yeah.
You can keep it to peel your grapes.
Now that would have hurt a lot more if I left the ring on.
I had forgotten Aidan Gillen slapped the shit out of me. That was a real slap, and that was not scripted. I totally forgotten. I worked with Aidan Gillen on Queer as Folk, and we played Lovers, and it was an amazing experience being exposed to his process and just an actor of that caliber, his integrity. That I remember just being so excited, you know, 15 years later to go back and get to work with him again, until he slapped the shit out of me unscripted. And then I was less excited about working with him in the next scene. King Arthur, my first opportunity to work with Guy Ritchie, which was a dream come true. I'd grown up on Snatch and Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels, so it was very exciting to get to do this.
I see what you're doing. You're trying to get me to do something razzle-dazzle with that sword. I'm gonna tell you right now, I'm not getting drawn into this mess.
It felt like me and Guy had a shorthand from minute one. I knew that we were gonna love each other. He was less confident that that was gonna be the case, and he didn't want to see me. And King Arthur is like my movie. I wanted to become an actor from watching John Borman's Excalibur. Felt like we're doing King Arthur, that's my role. But he didn't want to see me. And so I said, please, I mean, literally 20 minutes, a cup of tea, I'll fly myself to England. I'm asking just for 15 minutes so I can tell you how much I love you and this movie. And then if you still don't like me, then, you know, that's, you know, more fool you. Guy is fantastic with action. It's interesting. Some of the great action sequences in the film were never rehearsed, never actually written onto the page. I show up and Guy said, we're gonna go over to this other location and let's like put together a little fight scene. And so he would just put these action sequences together, and a couple of the great ones from this film were just literally done in an hour on the day.
I think the sword is so... Excalibur is an inherently interesting object.
Yeah.
It has permeated pop culture. That's why calling it The Legend of the Sword is fucking ridiculous. It's so stupid. Everyone knows what Excalibur is, like, you can... Fuck it, even if you don't know it, that sounds interesting. The Legend of Excalibur. Ooh. Like, it's... I think there's something here. It has all the real fundamental... I mean, King Arthur is a huge inspiration to what fantasy is today. I mean, you look at all of the shit. Like, you look at He-Man, you could look at Thundercats, you can look at the stuff that true is not necessarily super prevalent now, but was for a very long time in the 80s, 90s, and, like, 2000s. I don't know, man. I think you can do this well. I think you can really do any of this kind of stuff well. It just takes effort and real prep and a real commitment to what it is, rather than just kind of like, what if we add this? Would that be interesting? I'm looking at the fantasy movies of the 2010s, and I know I've spent a lot of time on this, but I don't think people truly understand how bad this is. We're talking about Prince of Persia, Wrath of the Clash of Titans, and then its sequel, Wrath of Titans. We're talking Seventh Son. We're talking, what the fuck? The Last Airbender. Fucking the Percy Jackson movie. The Hobbit movies.
Oh
Gods of Egypt, like I said. Jupiter Ascending. And now, people defend that, and the Wachowskis deserve credit, but it is a flop. The Fantastic Beasts, the first two or three or whatever the fuck. Snow White and the Huntsman.
Okay, not too much on Snow White and the Huntsman. Not too
Dracula
much.
Dracula.
Not too much true. On Snow all right, White.
All right. I haven't seen it, so it looks interesting. Maleficent. I haven't really heard many great things. Into the Woods. That's a musical. Doesn't really count. Dracula Untold. Like, this is bad. Miss Peregrine's Peculiar Children, the only thing that stands out here that's not, like, and something in this list, they kind of include, like, some indies. Oh, the BFG. The only thing that stands out, and I do think these are legitimately good movies, is the How to Train Your Dragons. That's basically the best fantasy films you get from the 2010s.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that you mentioned that.
The House with the Clock in the Walls? Jesus.
Ooh. Throughout watching this, actually, I was like, I know I mentioned this already, that like maybe he was trying to make like a Beowulf, like a video game, like, because the certain climax moments in the climax, I'm like, yuck, CGI slob. But throughout, I was like, yeah. What if this had been like animated? I feel like that would have taken a lot of the pressure off and like maybe helped tell a more coherent story in a way. I don't know. I just feel like sometimes I look at Richie, I look at his films, I look at what he wants to do, and I'm like, I feel like you're in the wrong medium. I feel like you should
John Carter
pivot a little. Oh my god. Low key.
Clinic. But people stand up for John Carter, but yeah. it is a flop.
It's bad.
It's bad.
But Taylor Kitsch.
Yeah, the Dark Tower. Oh, jeez.
My god.
Yeah.
This is bad. This is really... Sorry, I didn't mean to... What you were saying about Richie. I'm so sorry, Livia. I feel like I derailed your whole thing.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
I think the animated... He likes to do so much with the camera. It's hard to see him being fully committed to that. I would be fascinated as hell to watch it. But, like, there's that cut, or that scene when they're getting chased by all the guards after the assassination attempt, and it's this extreme random, it's the most random thing. That's why this movie is kind of gripping to me. It's, like, it does these extreme, like, GoPro shaky cam shots of their face.
Yeah.
As they're running. And you don't see that else, you don't see that kind of filmmaking in the entirety of the rest of the movie. They just do that for, like, 10 seconds on each character and then stop.
Yeah.
It's, like, really bizarre. And I do think that it shows how cut to shit this movie was, not just in its edit, like, but like how truncated it was. But I find it so funny. He's like, oh, I wanted this to be this grand epic, but you're rejecting a lot of the ideas that come with epics. In the sense of how your approach to Arthur and his, you know, and his the guys around him, and like those interpersonal relationships. Like, you are kind of rejecting that idea, even though you're having all these other elements, like, you know, the big elephants and battle scenes and, you know, the fantasy creatures and the magic and the king, you know, like, these king's journey and tragedy and all this stuff. You have all these, like, epic ingredients, but, like, a lot of the core elements of what makes an epic, you're rejecting or twisting it in a way to your own liking. Which I'm not totally against, but it just does. There's just no coherence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the mesh of tone that is really hard to stomach. This on like any viewing, like it's like a rewatch or a first time watch. I feel like it just is so obvious as it is reshot and recut to hell. And it's in those moments like the assassination attempt when it's like, oh, this was like passed through, you know, some semblance of an original cut of the movie. And then when there was something to be shortened or like condensed, then you can certainly feel it. Something I feel like that, because I feel like with the fantasy thing, we've solved it kind of with being like Game of Thrones, just sort of like fed everyone's fantasy diet, and movies just were not the place for it. Do we count none of them were good. Dune as fan? Do we count Dune as fantasy?
So that's where you get into the Star Wars conversation of what is sci-fi and what is fantasy. Because Star Wars is kind of inherently fantasy because it's not based in any kind of modern reality, because it's all just...
Sure.
So, but the thing is, it's anything that is somewhat space-related or futuristic is considered sci-fi to the greater audience, even though it might not reach the technical definition. I think you are kind of right, Jack, where it's the medieval aesthetic and attitude, and like these like old like myths and stories, but I have to say it might literally just be that all of these movies I mentioned suck.
Yeah, the 2010s were rough.
Right.
They were a rough time.
Like, I don't know how you're supposed to be a successful genre when all of those movies suck balls. Like, even if... Like, I'm not... Like, it's not even, like, maybe it's not necessarily the audience...
Suck balls.
It's not necessarily, like, the audience has grown... oh, we don't like medieval stories anymore. It's more of, like, they just get presented heaps of shit. And they're like, huh? You want it? And the audience is like, no. I don't
counterpoint though.
Right. I want to go see the 24th Marvel movie. Uh-huh. Yeah, like I yeah or something. But it's
where does like someone like Ridley Scott fit into that conversation though? Cuz he did Robin Hood and I want to say 2010.
He did Robin Hood in 2010.
Last Duel.
But those
but then does this get into like it no, it, I mean it's a great movie.
But it wasn't successful, but it's not shit. And neither right. I would argue Robin Hood also wasn't shit, but no one was interested in
it. But then it do we get into another conversation of like is King Arthur : Legend of the Sword like a sword and sandal movie or is like Gladiator like Alexander, like those sorts of like early 2000s trends, or is it something more high concept, or is it
is the
because that's sort of how I don't know.
It's like maybe magic isn't the turn off. Maybe it's the aesthetic, but I don't know. It's like the Harry. I'm trying to think all. Like, I'm just thinking of movies that haven't done well tied to this genre, and I
were you about to say Harry Potter?
Well, the thing is, the Fantastic Beasts...
I was kind of thinking Harry Potter.
Well, the Fantastic Beasts movies did worse as they went along, like, box office-wise and quality-wise.
Uh-huh.
But the thing is... But so, is it like... Are audiences losing interest, or have lost interest in this stuff, or... Are they just not enjoying the shitty movies? Like, I don't know. Like, are they just getting burned too many times? Like, is there an actual appetite for this? And, you know, and people are like, well, Dungeons and Dragons were good. Yes. Yes, but one, it's like the first one in years that's not like How to Train Your Dragon or whatever. And second, it's like that was a very weird release. The pandemic was still going on. And, I mean, so, you know, whatever.
And it's not like an earnest, like...
No,
it's like a. No, I mean earnest in it's adapting, like a myth or a story. Like it's like a comedy, right? It's like a comedy.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, it's not.
Like
no,
a
it does. It's not
comedy in tone.
Right. In a way, yes. Okay, I see what you mean. Yeah. Yeah, it's not. It's not. You know.
Is it?
It's not like a. Yeah, it's not like based on Excalibur or whatever. Right. Yeah.
The film had gone, nah, tone's wrong. So right there and then, 5 seconds before we're about to start filming, we go, oof, I think we'll throw that out the window. What we'll do now is this, that, and the other. And it took us all of 30 seconds to come up with a new idea. And it's a completely new idea. But the film had dictated that we were going in a different direction. And as I say, our job really was just to be sensitive to that and go, that's not our tone anymore.
And is that the reason why the romance ultimately was cut out of them? Because it's funny, now having seen the movie, I can't imagine that that plot would have
worked. I'm quite enjoying this interview, aren't you, Charlie? Because there's catharsis taking place in this. Because Charlie and I haven't really, I mean, we're obviously aware that the romance evaporated, but that's exactly why the romance evaporated, is because the movie didn't want it. We went into it with quite a traditional point of view, and as you go into it, the movie was just, it was going to reject it all day long.
It was,
and as you say now, it seems absurd that we had this rather traditional romance that was going through there. But it's a very, actually, as I say, we haven't talked about it, and that's the most eloquent illustration of it.
Do we think that The Hobbit has something to do with this? Like the failures of that trilogy, where it's like, no thanks. Like, you crippled something we loved. Like,
how far in the Hobbit trilogy were we when King Arthur came out?
We're done.
It was done.
Yeah.
It goes,
maybe.
What? Desolation of Smaug was what, 13? 14?
Oh, yeah, because
I think it ran from 2012 to 2014, I believe so, off the top of my head.
Five Armies came out. Yeah, so. Maybe.
2015, 2014. See, yeah, and like my brain is like kind of short-circuiting sometimes when I'm just like, well, but no one liked Five Armies. You know, it's one of those things where you kind of like, when you think about it, or like, and people thought the first two were meh at best. No one was loving those movies. And so it's like.
Yeah.
I guess, like, you know, it's like, maybe there has, that doesn't have to be, oh, there, it's, you know, Hollywood's fault or it's the audience's fault, but. I mean, Game of Thrones is very popular, and it was quite good for a while, and, you know, I hear House of Dragons is actually pretty solid, so it's like, they show up for that. There's probably other television I'm not thinking of that's fantasy-related that is actually decent and they showed up for, but, like,
yeah,
I don't know, man. It's weird.
There is something to be said for, like, how so many of, like, the movies of the 2010s that we're discussing were popular with a very small, I'm talking about Tumblr, just like these were made low-key
right.
to be Tumblr movies. Like the amount of
right
gifts I saw, like for the longest time I thought the Hobbit movies weren't so bad because I was on Tumblr and I was looking at like the Thorin x Bilbo gift sets and we're like, well, this man's pretty, this man's in Sherlock. And there's like gay subtext, so it has to be good, right? And you could say the same for like, I'm telling on myself so bad right now.
No, I watched Sherlock too, but I just find it funny. It's like, well, he was on Sherlock.
You know what I mean, though? He's like a Tumblr darling.
No,
it's
absolutely.
You start a math equation.
Yeah. Tumblr
math.
More for sure.
Yeah.
Is Maze Runner Tumblr?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I would assume so,
yeah.
The YA adaptations are certainly the pipeline.
And I
for,
think for a while, like, that was enough. Like, we're looking at how these movies, like, flopped, like, on paper. But they meant a lot to someone. And I think that's nice. And I think that is a nice segue into talking about Charlie Hunnam. And
yeah, I, oh my God, you are brilliant. See, you should host
your
own
God,
show.
Thank you.
Libby, please, any Hunnam takes, go right ahead.
I think he's so interesting. I think he's such an interesting person to look at because he is cut from the same cloth as someone like Hayden Christensen, Sam Worthington, like Taylor Kitsch also. Anyone from the failed like fantasy things that we were just talking about, like Lead Man, Hollywood is pushing them so hard, and like on paper it it ought to work. They're
a bit of Heath Ledger,
yeah,
if you
a
will.
Sprinkle of Heath Ledger. Yeah. Yes, you get it. It's like
a sprinkle of Heath Ledger.
They're conventionally attractive. They're gruff. They're charming. There's like a scene towards the beginning of like that like. Crack infused montage where he like kind of like sits up in bed and it's just like his back and it's his back muscles and he's shadow boxes angrily and I'm like yes this is enough for me. This is enough right now, but then it became not enough. And I think
What if King Arthur was just some hot, sexy bloke from the streets? I mean, that's pretty much what he's given.
That's, and I respect Guy Ritchie for asking that question and trying to explore that with Hunnam. I do think it's interesting, though, because I know Hunnam can act. I know he's a good actor. But it's like watching him in this, and low-key, like, watching him in, like, something like Pacific Rim, something like Crimson Peak, I'm like, something is not clicking, and it really, like, baffles me, like, trying to figure out why that is, and why, like, it should work. Like, if this was 2004, forget it. Like, yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
But it's not.
He is, like, maybe of the wrong generation. Yeah,
which is really sad.
I guess, because, and of the other leading men that you named,
but he made,
they do tend, I mean,
go ahead, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah, like it, of the other leading men that you named, like they tend to be lost in the production of the movie, and where it's like they just are too grounded of an actor for the, you know, high concept movie that they're in. And maybe that's what he finds himself in here. The performance that I always go back to for Hunnam that he's like excellent in is Lost City of Zed, which we have yet to cover, but I'm sure when we do, we will sing his praises then.
Which was 2017 or 2016?
Yes, same year. As this. I think it was it came out in the previous can, the 2016, but came out the following fall, or the following spring. The first role that I have ever seen him in, funny enough, is very early, which was Paul Feig and Judd Apatow's show after Freaks and Geeks,
the
Undeclared.
The college one.
The college one, yes. And that sort of like broke him out into American audiences with like Jay Baruchel and Seth Rogen and like a bunch of people.
Well, so this is what I was going to say in the sense of, yes.
He can be funny.
He might be in the wrong generation, but the thing is, he's popular, or became popular, because of the boom of prestige television. That is what he made his bones. Sons of Anarchy is for sure prestige television, and it got caught up in all of that. It was on FX, it was popular, it had a fan base. It was very serious, and you know, had like these big casts and sprawling storylines. So that is where he makes his bones and turns into anyone people want to work with. So, and after that, we get Pacific Rim, or like right as it's right before it ends.
Mm-hmm.
And then Crimson Peak, and then The Lost City of Z, and then King Arthur. Some other stuff, and then Triple Frontier.
Oh God!
And good movie. And he's actually really good in it.
I agree.
But then he's getting back to indie stuff, and but then he also he's just all over the place. He hasn't really picked a lane because he's also done The Gentlemen. He went back with Guy Ritchie.
Mm-hmm.
I have not seen that movie. I've heard it's quite racist.
And
I've seen like a clip or two, and he doesn't seem particularly great in it. And now he's in Snyder's Rebel Moon movies that, you know, exist. he does a string of indies, you know, from post King Arthur besides Triple Frontier. I don't know, man. He hasn't found any kind of real, besides Ritchie, and it's only really two movies, he hasn't, and I guess Snyder now, but it's in the same franchise, he hasn't really found a director. Oh, I guess Del Toro, but again, only two movies.
Yeah.
He hasn't really found a wagon to hitch himself onto.
It's so frustrating.
And I feel like when actors are at this weird middle point, they kind of need that.
Yeah.
They either need one amazing role or to hitch a ride on a director and have these like two second base hitters.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't really have that right now. I don't know what because Sons of Anarchy is done. It's 10 years ago. It says some cultural relevance, but I don't like that fan base has died down quite a bit. Like, there's no like real fever for that show anymore. And I don't know if there's how much public appetite there is for Hunnam. Because, like you said, he is cut from that same cloth of actors that Hollywood forces on us and we kind of deny. But he's inherently more like more interesting and a better actor than the other those others. So I don't know. He's rejected the superhero route, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's on purpose or just never really formulates. I think I've heard him in the running for stuff in the past, but who knows?
Yeah, for Green Lantern.
That's right.
Or not.
Everyone has fan cast
Green Arrow.
Green Arrow. Yeah, everyone has fan casted him as Green Arrow, but no real that has
oh, interesting.
Nothing like that has actually existed. And I also don't think he'd be I don't know. Green Arrow is like a socialist billionaire, so I don't know. I don't.
Sounds like an
oxymoron. I know, right? Like, that character is way more interesting than people think. But I don't know. I don't know. I want great things. I think he has proven, like Lost City of Z, like Triple Frontier, like Sons of Anarchy, that he has the stuff. But it's just not really...
Undeclared.
It's just not,
it's funny
like,
because...
materializing into anything.
Yeah, I was having this thought when I was watching King Arthur today, like just before this. I was watching him, and I'm going to flex a little. 6 months ago, I got to interview him, and we were sitting in the same room together. Oh
Rebel
my God,
Moon.
You guys, he's, yeah, for Rebel Moon. He's gorgeous, and he's so freaking nice. And yeah. He was telling me this story. Because
he can't have both of those things.
I know.
So annoying.
I know, I'm sorry. He was like, I think he had the sense that people were going to make fun of his character's accent because in the film he does this really weird like Irish lilt. But he was explaining to me, he was like, yeah, we decided because we were talking like since this is like set in space, it doesn't really make sense for him to have like a traditional Irish accent. And also like during the test screenings, people didn't understand me. So I went back and ADR'd every single line to make more sense. And I was just sitting there like, he's so dedicated, even when the movie is crap. He's so like, he dives into everything. And I'm just like, I wish that there was a director that was a serious person. That could be like, yeah, I want to have fun. We can do genre. We can do this. We can do whatever you want. But I'm going to, like, see this film through. Like, I would love to see him in an A24 movie. I think that's what he needs, to be honest. Regardless of director, I think, like, that kind of film is what he needs right now.
I think he was in one. It's
Stop.
Not their most popular Papillon. With Rami Malek, the same year, I mean, funnily enough, the same year as King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, colon, and Lost City of Z. I think they're all of the same, like, 6 or 7 months. But I think this one was, like, a smaller thriller that went nowhere, if I'm not mistaken. I think this one's also sort of, like a quest for something. I remember hearing about this when it came out, but...
I've never heard of this film.
Yeah, but he's not. I mean, like we're saying, it's like he is an actor with leading man qualities, not really with a path to like a particular, a particular mode.
Yeah.
I mean, Sons really gave him a boost, I think, with a certain audience.
The John Hamm effect.
Yeah.
They're not a Ham effect, certainly.
The prestige leads who can't translate into movies, even though, boy howdy, they've tried. You could argue Cranston, but he's always been more of a character actor, but definitely not really any of his lead stuff has been successful. You could argue Rami, but he won an Oscar and he was a Bond villain.
He did win an
so
Oscar.
Probably not. But now I don't know. Like, it depends. It's like these guys come out of prestige television. We give them a few shots, and then we kind of kick them to the curve. as at least a leading man. So maybe what Hanum needs to do is go into character actor mode and just stay there for a hot minute.
Pull a Mads Mikkelsen.
Yeah, I mean...
Or a Clive Owen.
Or a Ben Mendelsohn. Mm. Yeah.
Yes. I love that idea. I'll just become a director.
Do you feel like that he's more character actor in Rebel Moon?
Yes. Oh my god, he's so charming in that movie. I really, really enjoyed him in that movie. Irish accent be damned. He was tapped in a way that I haven't seen him in a long time. And I think, like...
That's good.
I know people have their thoughts about Snyder. I'm a Snyder apologist, just getting that out of the way.
I kind of am, too.
A slay! I think Snyder understands what to do with him. Like, this movie, I think it's so interesting. Like, I know this is, like, a 2020s movie, so I won't talk about it too long. But the...
Those don't exist to
us.
Yeah,
you're like, what is that? I don't...
I stopped watching movies in 2019.
I think Snyder gets a lot of flack for, like, this idea of, like, forced sexuality. But there's a restraint to Rebel Moon in, like, fits and starts, obviously, where the charisma of the characters allows this, like, sexual chemistry to come through, and that's largely due in part to Charlie Hunnam. So... I think he could work with Snyder again, and it would be a lot of fun.
Well, he is. I mean, the second one's coming out.
I have something to tell you.
Oh, he dies in the first
one?
He dies.
Oh, he's credited.
I thought you were going to say the second one is not coming
out.
He's
credited for the second one, so maybe they do something.
That'd be nice. The flashback. That would be nice.
Yeah, I'm waiting. I'm a Snyder apologist, but I'm waiting for, like, the extended cut or whatever, like, the real version. Because that's all. He just doesn't make the real versions for the studios, so he just has to. We have to wait for the, like, the actual version. So I'm waiting for that.
He's a petty bitch.
Yeah, I don't know. He's a beefcake. That's my main takeaway.
I don't think that this will happen to Jeremy Allen White after the Bear.
No.
I have more.
Bruce Springsteen.
I think that could be something. That could be. I don't have much. I have less faith in Scott Cooper than I have in
what I will say is a
Springsteen movie.
I feel
movie.
Like now.
I think we're starting to learn from it.
With Prestige, I think you can get away with it now because the lines have blurred. TV is movies. Movies are TV. Like, The Bear, especially, is, like, on this level that it's like. It almost encourages a crossover, like a transition into film.
Do you think it's because these actors become less synonymous with their characters and more as individuals? Because I think the issue with Hamm and Hunnam is that I don't think people could really see them outside of, they just saw them as Don Draper and Jax Teller. Do you think that's changing?
My dad. Yeah.
I don't know.
Because we have now more access to the actors themselves via TikTok, social media, red carpet stuff. I mean, we did back then too, but it's more heightened than ever. And you have also, like, more fan clubs of specific actors as, like, people rather than the characters they play.
That's so true.
So I don't know. That's just a thought I just had. Maybe it's stupid. Maybe it's brilliant. Who knows? We'll let the world decide.
AdBirds of Clay. Everyone wins.
I hope the best for Hunnam. I would love to see that scruffy beard and more things. I do have to ask, does Boutella and Hunnam fuck in Rebel Moon?
Not in the PG-13 version. It's implied. I think they do.
I can't imagine Snyder is a very sex-driven.
Hey, man, those two actors, you try to make it unsexy. Impossible.
Honestly, I will say, there's a scene where he's wearing, like, this cutout muscle tee, and you can see, like, lats, like, the side slit, and he's talking to her, and he's like, oh, you know, like, since your team like needs me so much, I guess I'll come with you. And they're basically fucking. They're essentially, it's a sex scene with words. So I don't know if I can handle seeing them actually have sex.
I Snyder, you motherfucker, you better do it.
But let's get to favorite scene of King Arthur.
Or least favorite scene.
Colon, Legend of the Sword.
We're not gonna stop you.
I think I'm gonna have to go.
If anybody would like to go first.
With when Jude Law summons the trio of tentacle women. Clay, was that yours? Mm.
It was in the running, but that's such a weird scene that I really like.
Yes, it's like it's a glimmer of the movie that we could have got, like this Macbethian kind of like you made this deal, and now just the dread over that
that's
scene.
Creepy.
And, yes, and like nasty, and there's like a shot where one of the like the little tentacle girls is like lurking by the rock and like taunting him, and he kind of like kicks his foot out a little as if to say like shoo, and I'm just like, I was imagining him filming that scene and I was just fascinated. I would to be a fly on the wall on that day.
Yeah, I know we're starting to, and that's a very good like explanation of that scene, like I know that we're starting to wrap, and like, but I just want to throw out there one more fantasy that literally just came to mind with Justin Kurzel's Macbeth.
Oh, yeah. That also,
if any of us have seen. I wonder, like, that was also kind of a flop, but that's just something that exists.
That's the one with
Fassie,
right?
Like, people stand, Fassbender, yeah.
Fassie.
She calls him. I understood what you were saying.
I didn't quite hear. I need a clarification.
Yeah. I'm not
Jack
there.
Is like Michael Fassbender? Like, yes. Yeah. Say his full name.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Put some respect.
Say his German middle name. No, I don't know.
I wish I knew it.
But no, I know that it did not do great at the time, but people still stand up for Kurzel's Macbeth. Clay, do you have a scene?
Why is the water dropped? Why does the sword reveal itself now? I'm not ready. The tower is not complete.
As your power increases, so do the forces that will oppose you. Balance is a law that cannot be transgressed. The born king will come. It is inevitable.
We had a deal. When the blood of a loved one is spilt in these waters, my desire must be met.
There is no ambiguity, my lord. We kept our side of the covenant. It was you who lost the boy and the sword.
Have I not sacrificed enough?
And have you not felt your power increase? With every kingdom conquered, with every level added to your tower, when it is capped with the silver from gold, you have what you wanted.
Find the boy. Kill him. The sword will answer only to you. If you desire further help, you know the price.
Yes. And I forgot it. No, I remember it. It's the assassination attempt. I think that's really...
That's what you do.
I think that's built really well, and it's, like, taught, and... I really like Aidan Gillian in that scene. He's so fucking kind of sadistic. He's like, no, I'm going to kill him. Don't worry. I'm going to kill him. Like, and like the slow motion of
really
the chalk
sexy.
On his fingers. It's really cool. And he's like, you missed. He's like, I didn't miss.
No, like that's hot. That's a really hot scene.
Yeah.
That's what you want more of.
Yeah. And it's like, again, there's a lot of things happening, a lot of moving parts, and it doesn't really feel super cut to shit. It's a little more restrained. It lets the tension build. There, you know, Hanum and Jaimon are like helping that with, like, they're like, no, it's not, that's not him. No, it is him. Blah blah blah. Yeah, I think that's a really solid scene and was definitely a standout.
This is too easy. Wait, don't fight.
Why not?
Something doesn't smell right.
It smells as right as it's ever going to smell.
Come on, he's right there.
Bill, get on with it.
It's a trap.
How would he know?
Don't know. Maggie, maybe he knows she's working for us. I am telling you, that is not the king.
Stop looking around and look at me.
I'm a target, aren't I?
God help us. They've sent me a buffoon.
You are a cunning old bastard, Vortigern. But what you fail to understand is that it's you who's fed the hangman that will eventually come for you.
You're right, that's not Vortigern. But at least Mercy's here.
Guzva! What have you done? You can't shoot if it's a trap!
They'll never know where that came from.
You missed him anyway.
I didn't miss anyone.
No targets are fair.
That was Clarendon. He earned that.
You might survive today.
I think I would say the escape, and then the fight scene. I think it's similar reasons to like the assassination attempts. Like it's like really propulsive action, and you get from that scene like. More of just, I think, what you want in like more of the choreography of like some of the highlights of like Game of Shadows that we discussed in that pod. But I think it's like some of the best lighting. Like you can actually see everything.
Are you including the diarrhea dust storm at the very end, or
let's say everything leading up to that moment?
I think I would say, but I don't know. I'd have to see like what the clip on YouTube would allow me to put into this episode because I think I'll trim it.
Activates and then everything becomes diarrhea dust. Yeah. And then you know, just like then
or
he
just
like takes
CGI
out fools.
Dust.
It's just like a hurricane, like or like a dust hurricane, and you can barely see anyone. I'm like, who thought this was a good idea? But no, I do like their escape. I like you said. Yeah, I do stand by the idea that this is a strangely propulsive movie, and I think it's just because it's on crack that it is. And that might be nauseating for some or annoying for some, but I found it somewhat engaging. At least it made up for some of the shittier elements.
Too many. This way. Come on. Come on, guys.
You'll make it.
I can make it, no problem.
Get the lads out the back door,
George. It's not going to happen, boss. They hate the Black Lake and love a fight.
There's too many of them.
It's not going to happen. They live for this.
They're going to die, George.
They trained their whole lives for this.
Let go!
Come on, George! Find the section, Ray!
You two down here. It's a straight run to the river.
You go first.
We don't have time to argue, Bill.
Some of us will make it out in time. Some of us won't.
We'll bear some than none!
You go first.
Mike! Get down the hole! Mike! Get down the hole!
Bella Rats, boss.
Del!
Let's get to the dock.
Really? George, will you tell him?
Sorry, boss.
Weapons!
You silly bastards. Determined to die. Shit.
On my command!
Livy Scott.
Yes.
A pleasure to have you on. Thank you so, 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 so much. You're a gem and a person who brightens everyone's day.
Oh my god.
Oh my god. Oh my god. Yeah.
Thanks for having me again. I really appreciate you giving me the time to and the platform to go along about hot men and bad movies. A lot of fun this
time. I'm curious what, like, if, like, sort of mythological, like, fantasy, like you cook up for next time that's, like, sort of, like, has this, like interesting
just,
legacy.
I think, like,
as,
we just said,
yeah,
there's not many. They're all
What if I did, I might have to do another shitty one, but Snow White and the Huntsman, that was my comfort movie for a really long time.
Ooh.
So.
Let's do it.
Ooh.
And there's plenty of drama with K-Stew and the director having their
that is true.
Much to discuss.
I feel like that is one that we can combine both movies also, but we shall see.
Yeah.
One of these days, I think that we'll have someone to choose John Carter, because I know that that one is like, has been like, more loved over time since its release, but
I'm surprised no one.
Hey, Andrew Stanton,
already.
He's so fun. I know. Yeah, I would think so too. But I'm sure it's only a matter of time because that is another career where anyone coming from animation to jump to live action films is always very wishy washy. But if you have anything that you're working on right now, like the Hunnam interview. Plug that and, like, you know, where people can find you online, all that stuff.
Yeah, sure. So my interview with Charlie Hunnam can be found on inverse.com. that's basically my 9-to-5 job. That's where I work all the time. I also recently interviewed Chris Carter of the X-Files fame, which was really cool. I got to hang out with him at his art exhibition in LA and pet his dogs. That's also on Inverse. I'm coming back to TikTok. I was on TikTok in like the late days of lockdown, and then I stopped because it just became a toxic place, but I'm back, and you can find me at just Livie Scott, LYVIESCOTT, there, on Twitter, and on Instagram, if you're there.
Dope.
Fabulous.
She's back, guys.
Yeah, we're so back.
We're so back.
We're so back. I can be found on Twitter, Jack A. Draper, Letterboxd, Jack A. Draper, Writing on Film is at the Boston Hassle. This movie is available to stream, I don't think anywhere in the U.S. right now.
Gotta pay.
But also, next episode, we go to 2018 for what you could see as more of a 2003 comic book movie. It's time for Venom, with the great Fletcher Peters returning to the pod. Finally.
Venom. I'm thinking of doing my plugs in the Venom voice, but no.
Damn.
Everyone can find me, Birds of Clay, on Twitter and on Instagram. And Letterboxd. You could follow
Livie, the help. It's going to be a lot of that.
It's going to be a lot of that. And I'm going to be right next to him, too. It's going to be great. I'm going to just do it in his ear.
It's going to be great. Yeah, who will?
Follow the podcast, Twitter account, ETC Pod. Send us an email at exiting52010@gmail.com. Please remember to rate, review, subscribe. Give us 5 stars on any podcast platform. Listen to us on to. Greatly appreciated. Run up to someone in the middle of the street and say, "Oi, are you King Arthur?" And then say, "Go listen to Exiting Through the 2010s and run away." Be good to yourself. Stay safe. Keep supporting the ceasefire movement happening for Gaza right now. And as always, we will catch you next time.
We all should have done our plugs in, like, Cockney accents. I feel like that would have been
We would have offended the entirety of England.
We would have had a personal cease and desist from Guy Ritchie.
We would definitely not be knighted. We would, instead of, like, the sword touching our shoulders, they would just cut off our heads.
If anyone in the UK is listening to this, gone this far, first of all, thank you. But also know that we mean no insults.
We respect you so much.
I did call one of your citizens a reptile person, so my bad.
This is true.
And as always, we will catch you next time on Exiting Through the 2010s.